Campus FM presents Talking Eds, a program brought to you by students from the International Masters in Adult Education for Social Change, who are studying currently at the University of Malta.
Welcome to the 13th show of Talking Eds Season 2, presented by students of International Masters in Adult Education for Social Change, Cohort 2. I am Sabrina from Bangladesh, your host for the day. Today we will be discussing about senior adults as active members of society in different contexts. To discuss about this topic, today we have Dania, Yumi and Amelia. Hello guys.
Hello to my colleagues and our audience.
Hello everybody.
Hello everyone, this is Yumi.
Thank you, Sabrina. Thank you, guys. Personally, I feel very enthusiastic about this show because I bet each of our audience members know at least one senior friend who is worth to mention and has so much life experience and passion about contributing to our society in every part of this world. Today, we're discussing about how senior citizens are an active part of our society in different settings. We will focus on both non-formal and informal settings. Firstly, I would like to acknowledge that I had no idea there was any program specifically designed to senior citizens. This really made me feel glad since we do not have any program of this sort in my country. It also made me think of how important it is to give the opportunity to senior citizens to continue learning and enjoying their life in accordance with their new lifestyle. I just realized this on my trip to Italy this last Christmas holidays. I had the chance to attend one of the Spanish classes at one of the universities of third age in Italy, in the city of Alessandria. I noticed how senior adults teach their senior adult fellas in a very safe and fun learning environment. I totally enjoy that. On this first section, as you can tell, I'm going to focus on non-formal education, specifically on the universities of third age. But I will also share a testimony of a senior friend from Honduras that had the opportunity to study at a non-formal educational institution after his retirement back in Honduras. To continue with this, did you know that the origins of this institution can be traced back to the 19th century in Denmark, in the idea of the People's University, which was created by Nikolai Frederik? The first facility of this kind addressed to the elderly, named the University of Third Age, was founded in France in 1973 on the initiative of Pierre Vallès, professor of international law and sociology. Nowadays, we can find U3As all around the world. For example, Malta, Italy, Australia, China, Cape Town, Uruguay, Dominican Republic, among others. You can find more about this in the article The University of Third Age as an Institution Contracting Marginalization of Older People.
Thank you, Dania. Also, it's very important to mention that methodologically aspect of the universities of third age, in the academic article, the impact of university of the third age courses on ICT adoption, it's claimed that from a teaching perspective, U3As provide non-formal learning where participants are not expected to sit for examinations, but to engage in learning as an end in itself. This is very fascinating because the internal motivation of learning in senior adults give them the chance to retake any interest they had in an earlier stage of their life, stay productive and socially active. But I would like to know an example of a non-formal U3A.
Yes, Yumi, I will refer to your country to illustrate. The U3A, or Universities of Third Age, of a non-formal nature would be Tianjin University for the Elderly, founded in 1985 and named China's most advanced university for the elderly in 2011. The university has 9 faculties for foreign languages, calligraphy, painting, life skills, health and fitness, medicine and healthcare, dance and drama, music and information technology. Courses are organized into basic, intermediate, advanced and professional levels. It can take up to 2 years to master each level. I believe it might be a very attractive proposal because it combines all the learning domains, cognitive, affective, physical, and social.
That's a really interesting example, Danya. Did you find any other universities of the third age in formal settings for seniors?
Yes, Amelia, and actually I did not expect that. There is one of them I could find, and it seems to be very interesting because I thought all of U3As would be a non-formal nature, but the U3A in the Dominican Republic is called Universidad de la Tercera Edad, which is translated to University of Third Age. However, this is a higher education institution offering bachelor's, master's degree, and technical programs. What it makes this university different from the formal and traditional models of higher education is that they propose a blended learning model, taking into account their socio-cultural and job factors. Having the adult learners attending the learning place once per week, having only one subject per month. To end this section, I cannot forget to talk about my friend Agustin from Honduras. Agustin was my classmate in the National Drama School. I thought it was really worthy to share his experience, and we are going to hear of it just now.
My name is Agustin Lopez. I was born in Honduras. And this is where I dwell with my daughter and my granddaughter. My two sons live in their own places. I am 78 years old and I am retired, but I keep moving around. I walk 10 kilometers every day from Monday to Friday. I sing and play my guitar. I visit places of interest downtown in my city. I went to live in the United States, in the state of New Jersey, and I stood there for 20 years. During that time, I got involved in different activities in sports and art. One of them was singing in the choir of my church. The choir minister gave me lessons of how to sing, especially opera, and I also learned a little bit how to read music. Eventually, I went to an audition to the Park City Theater in Union City, New Jersey, and was accepted with no experience whatsoever. They gave me instructions on how to act, and I performed very good. As soon as I came back to Honduras, I enrolled in the National School of Performing Arts to make real my dream as a youngster to be an actor. I have experienced many times the pleasure of acting in more than one stage and in front of a camera. During the time I attend the School of Arts, I am interacted with teachers and classmates in a way that my age did not make any difference in our relationship. So we understood each other in every activity that took place in the school or out of it. Make me feel so good being part of this activity, since some people are asking me to join them in their artistic projects. So at this time, I'm working with a small organization which intend to form an artistic group and perform around the country. Studying art has been rewarding to me. My knowledge is at a higher range, and I have learned a lot about literature, dramaturgy, history, and psychology. The physical exercise is very important in the study of acting, which makes us know our body better and how to keep it healthier. I believe that older adults should commit themselves to keep moving in every way. Physical exercise is very important since it makes our organs to work better, and this will keep us healthier. Learning something will keep our minds stronger. I encourage people over 50 to get moving in any way so we can live a healthier and better life.
We're back on the second part of our show, and we talked about universities of third age, mostly in non-formal settings, but also in formal settings. Besides, we had an anecdote about a senior friend of Daniel.
Agustin.
Yes. And there is no doubt that universities of the third age provide great resources for elderly people. But I'm afraid that this kind of formal education is not so well spread in the whole world. For example, I have Googled the University of the Third Age in China, and I noticed that there are only a small number of senior citizens that are lucky enough to access U3A due to limited resources. There are stories like seniors would stay in the queue for hours from 5 o'clock in the morning so that they can get a spot in such universities. And in some places, universities of the third age are still in the beginning process, and it requires more support to develop it to a larger scale. So rather than wholly depending on government or formal organizations, I feel informal education probably are more practical for senior citizens.
Yes, I agree with you, Yumi. Informal education is definitely equally important as formal education, especially for senior citizens, because the purpose of learning for them is relatively less utilitarian compared to younger people. It is necessary to expand the access to it so more senior citizens benefit from it. Besides, we cannot forget that most of them would be interested in enjoying their learning process rather than based to achieve any ambitious goals.
I have a great example. In recent years, there is a sweeping phenomenon existing in China. We call it square dancing. It starts in the north part of China and now it's spread to the whole nation. Basically, it's a group of elderly people dancing in a square. It can be a small group of 10 people. It can also be a quite big group to hundreds of people, depending on the size of the local community and the square as well. It's quite popular among senior citizens because it's easy to access. Everyone can join as they wish, and it provides a situation for them to socialize. Plus, it's also a kind of physical exercise for them.
That's a really interesting example, Yumi. I'm wondering who facilitates and supports these big events when there's hundreds of people involved.
Most of those events are actually supported by the participants themselves. For example, my grandma is a big fan of the square dancing, and in her group, every member would contribute 3 euros every month to rent equipment to play music in the square and to hire the leading dancer to teach them those dancing moves. And the neighborhood committee would also offer help if the group requests.
That seems to be a very successful pattern of informal education for senior citizens, and it's pretty impressive that they're mostly autonomously funded and facilitated. The motivations to do so here would probably be pretty closely related to the purpose of education for the senior citizens. It should be more focused on enriching their spiritual world and helping them to live their lives with a more positive attitude. There's a lot of research that proves that those who take part in learning in adult life are more likely to have flexible attitudes and are less likely to be intolerant of the views of others involved in crime.
Such an informal learning is obviously beneficial to elderly people in many ways, but it also reminds me of another group of senior citizens who might not be able to join such activities. I used to work in a rest home, and all residents there are over the age of 70 years. Most of them can only move slowly with the help of other people or a wheelchair. It is impossible for those older seniors to do any physical exercise. It actually takes most of their energy to live their daily lives. So I'm curious, what kind of education would be suitable for them, Yumi?
I'm actually working in one of those rest homes here in Malta now, and the situation that I have observed is quite similar to what you described. But the rest home that I'm working in right now is actually making all efforts to establish an educational environment for residents there. For example, since most people living there are Christians, they would organize mass in the morning so that people can study Bible together. And in the afternoon, sometimes they would organize manufacturer workshops so that people would sit together folding paper and chatting and do other stuff. And the staff would also show a movie in the hall, so those people who are interested can also watch a movie there.
That's a good example, Yumi. In many other care settings, people did an even better job in enhancing informal learning for senior citizens. I found an interview on YouTube that shows what positive effects residents received from their learning experiences in two British residential homes. Let's listen to what they're saying.
lots of people have an image in their mind of what a care home looks like and what it's like to be inside of a care home.
I've seen the way that people sit down in homes with not a lot to do, not doing anything, and it just doesn't seem like people are living, they're just existing.
Giving people something that is for them, rather than just having them sitting around watching a television, means that they're not almost waiting to die, they're, you know, waiting for the next thing to learn and excited about life. Today we're at Aigburth, which is a care home for about 32 residents in Leicester.
We're never bored here.
We have an activity rota and it runs every day of the week. Every Tuesday morning, of course, we have the learning for the fourth age here.
E is like a masculine, whereas E is more feminine.
Oh. All different things are happening. They all take place and are directed by the choices that residents make about what they would like to learn. And everything takes place one-to-one. So a resident can choose what they would like to learn and we have to go and find somebody who will help them to facilitate that learning.
Welch is in dda.
There we go.
Is that right?
Yeah, that's it.
I am trying to learn Welsh and as I'm 93 it's difficult. I was born in Cardiff, but it was a time when Welsh was being squashed out. So we never learned Welsh, and I feel bereft without it.
Yeah. B major.
B major,
yeah.
I used to play the piano a lot. When I had a stroke, I tried to play, and I couldn't really get going with it very well.
And we're playing, and she'll just suddenly remember how she used to play and just bring it back, and it's lovely to see. I really love it.
The sort of feeling of playing comes back somehow. It sort of makes me feel, well, I can do this. It's worth going on with this, because I'm going to get somewhere.
Yeah, you got it.
Well, I'm doing computer at the moment. Yeah. I'm sending a letter to my great-grandson because he sent me one and he wouldn't think that Gram could do this. But anyway, he'll have a surprise.
It just depends on the interest. If somebody is interested in something, you have that zeal and that appetite to go for it, no matter the cost and the time.
Well, it's very exciting. Yeah, I love it.
That sounds so nice, Yumi. Seems that they're really enjoying their lives in care settings. I definitely think that this activity should be provided to senior citizens.
Welcome back to our show, everybody. We've just heard from Yumi about participation by senior adults in informal contexts. In this last part of our show, we're going to share an interesting side of non-formal education, specifically in political participation. So, for many individuals, the term granny or grandma brings about an image of a sweet, older woman who bakes cookies and leads a quiet life. However, there's an activist group that's changing this perception. They call themselves the Raging Grannies and are social justice activists. This is a different type of education than we've been discussing thus far on the program. However, it's an important example that builds on our point that older adults can fully participate in educational pursuits and in society. The Raging Grannies participate in protests and are activists in political issues.
Okay, let me continue, Amelia. Let's talk about how the Raging Grannies began. In the 80s, in British Columbia, Canada, U.S. Navy ships and submarines were docking in the water surrounding Victoria Island. Different peace groups were protesting their visit due to the threats they pose environmentally and to the health of the islanders. However, a group of women were dissatisfied with their position within these peace groups, as they were generally given responsibility for making the coffee with little respect given to their voices or the ideas they presented. They decided to start their own activism group, and from the sexism and ageism they faced came the Raging Grannies.
Yes, and well, they started very small on a small island in Canada. Today there are numerous Raging Granny groups across Canada, the US and around the world. A group of Raging Grannies is known as a gaggle. And according to their websites, all they require of Granny's drawing or former gaggle is a sense of humor, a sense of outrage, and a commitment to non-violence. Women draw in the raging grannies for many reasons and come from diverse backgrounds. While some have been activists all their lives and others are new to the field and drawing in response to specific events or circumstances. Let's listen to an interview with Granny Jen, and she discusses the events and political climates that led her to join a gaggle of the raging grannies in the United States of America.
I had never been an activist. I didn't really know any groups, you know, they just didn't seem available, and I was busy with my life and working. And then when Bush became president, well, it became evident that I needed to do something because it just seemed like the situation was very bad.
So, as we heard, not all of the raging grannies have been activists all their lives. For many of them, it's new, and while their existence as an activism group of older, retired women is novel in itself, the raging grannies' methods are also very original. They use street theater, dress in attention-grabbing costumes, and write satirical songs to protest. As a group, they are unpredictable to the organizations and governments they protest, which challenges a lot of assumptions and makes them difficult to oppose. Nobody knows quite what they'll do next. What is common among their acts of protest is that they are non-violent in every sense of the term. But don't let that fool you into thinking that they are timid or cautious.
That's right. They really break the mold of what people imagine when they think of protesters. But they're also very popular with the public. Imagine a group of older women, all dressed in colorful clothes that exaggerated stereotypes of older women, singing satirical songs and using humor in their protests. It is a fresh alternative to the stereotype of protesters, young, angry individuals who are occasionally violent and often very loud. The raging grannies are not afraid to make their voices heard. Yumi, I think you have some examples of protests by the raging grannies to give us all an idea of the type of activism they participate in.
Yes, let's discuss some examples of the raging grannies' protests. In the 90s, as the war loomed in the Gulf and Canadians signed up to serve, the raging grannies protesting participation in the war went to a recruitment office and signed up as volunteers with knitting needles and wool. Nobody quite knew what to do with them in this setting, and they gathered a great deal of attention. They also crushed the military show in homemade military uniforms, and although they were denied entry, they stayed long enough to attract media attention. On a separate occasion, they attended government hearings on miming and brought the briefs they had to present in a laundry basket full of women's underwear. They are, however, maybe most popular for the songs they sing, often taking familiar songs or show tunes and rewriting the lyrics to reflect their message. This approach to protest is what many would consider to be unconventional.
We can really see in this group an example that not only illustrates the agency of a group of older adults participating actively in society, but importantly, this group uses their age to their advantage. Where many people say that learning or engagement end at a certain age, they prove the opposite. The raging grannies have used their age to gain access to sites. They appear harmless and non-suspicious, and that allows them to get closer to politicians or events that they are protesting, and also gains them fans and followers. They are unafraid of the stereotypes played on them, and instead use them to their advantage. Age remains a prominent factor in the running of the organization, both positively and sometimes negatively. Granny Barbara and Granny Ruthie will discuss the role that age plays in their organization.
I see myself as, I don't know what, 13, 15, 18 max. And that's laughable. I'm in my 70s. And so the mask of age is a very powerful, important mask. Unfortunately, in our society, it often means that you're just shunted away and considered a cast off.
I think older women have some wisdom to bring to the table, but it shows a certain kind of commitment too, that you're willing to go out even though you got arthritis, you know, you have all kinds of aches and pains.
So while the raging grannies are breaking down many of the stereotypes of older adults as having little to contribute, as we heard from Granny Barbara in that last clip, the effects of age are still at a play in the running of the group. They bring with them the wisdom they've accumulated over their lives and a confidence and exuberance that inspires many, but they also work through health issues and personal struggles. Let's listen to Granny Ann and Granny Ruth discuss why they take part in their gaggle and what it takes to be a raging granny.
I think people stay home and watch television, they become a vegetable. So we're not a vegetable. We're alive.
We're a bunch of hams, okay? I mean, we might as, if this war hadn't happened, we might have been off doing improv or something. It takes a certain kind of personality.
To bring our discussion back to education for elder adults, the education in these groups has a wide range. There is, of course, education within the group, out of the learning that comes from the meetings between members, from information and political issues they are protesting, to the skills it takes to run a successful protest. While some of the members may already have these skills from previous political participation, others are newer to the field of political activism and are learning it often first time. The gaggles of ranging grannies run independently. They don't have a large organization to answer to, and due to pay or hierarchical structure they work under. However, they do share resources among each other, from lyrics to new songs they've written to uploads and protests they've participated in.
We have reached the end of our show. Thank you, Emilia, Yumi, and Dania, for sharing your insights on senior citizens as active members of the community. We could learn and change our perspective regarding the role of the senior citizens in different contexts. We hope you have enjoyed this show. With this, me, Sabrina, Emilia, Yumi, and Dania saying our goodbye for the day, and grazie Hafna for listening to us.
Goodbye, grazie Hafna.
Bye, thank you.
Grazie.